Blog
Keeps wanting to keep going. Welcome to Kate Loving and the Creative Wisdom. My name is Kate Loving Schenck, and I am the host of this show. My guest this evening is Amy Ehlers, wake up coach and author of Big Fat Lies Women Tell Themselves, reading through the lies and the inner wisdom remedies to the false beliefs. I was more than a little familiar with the lies at one time or another in my life, and even some of them now. So let us invite Amy to bust through these myths, and I call them sad myths, as we sabotage, because we sabotage ourselves with these. The call-in number is 347-205-9200. Now, Amy hasn't yet joined me, so I'm waving to Carol in the chat room. Hi, Carol. The book, Big Fat Lies Women Tell Us, or Tell Themselves, is especially poignant, I think, not just for women, because men tell themselves lies too. But this book is specifically geared to women, because I think women have notoriously held themselves back forever and forever. Now let's see who this might be.
Hello
there.
It's Amy Ehlers.
Hello, dear Amy. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm really great.
Great.
I was just going through the introduction here, and I mentioned that you're a wake-up coach and of course, the author of The Big Fat Lies Women Tell Themselves, but that if we're all honest with ourselves, I'd say that at least once in a while, I have to be honest and say that all of these lies I have at one time or another said to myself. So we appreciate your being here tonight and trying to help us, you know, ease through these things and help us to get rid of them, is the way I see it. For once and for all, how's that sound?
Well, you know, the once and for all, I think that's probably a big fat lie, right? Because the big fat lies are going to come up, and as we grow and as we stretch and as we go into the next level in our life, we're always going to have our inner critic show up, and sometimes it's going to repeat the lies. As I say in the end of the book, you know, it's not about never having an inner critic or never hearing another lie again. It's about having the tools when they do show up. So maybe we can say having the transformation tools and having that toolkit ready for when they do show up.
Well, it is true that this is a day-by-day, and it's a continuous process of living a life that is free. You have to do the work, but or the play is... Probably the play is a better word. But how did you come to all of this? It sounds like it was a process, even a spiritual awakening.
It really was. You know, I've been a life coach now for going on 11 years, and I started to really notice a pattern amongst my clients, women in particular, but men definitely as well. And so any of you men out there that are listening know that this conversation is definitely applies to you, and all of the tools are ones that you can use as well in your life. But over the years, I just noticed that no matter how smart or successful or beautiful or thin or, you know, how great their kids were doing, you know, on some level, women are, in particular, are really, really hard on themselves. And
yes.
It didn't seem to matter what the external appearances were. You know, sometimes our external appearances have very little to do with our internal world. And I noticed this pattern, and I realized that, my gosh, we have got to start going easy on ourselves. We've got to start giving ourselves a break. And from that space of really tuning out the inner critic, who really is the source of the big fat lies and who is the big fat liar, and instead tuning in to our inner wisdom, that's when my clients' lives really changed, and definitely when my own life changed. And it eventually evolved into this book.
Right. And how long was this a process of writing, for many years, or is this something that after working with your clients, it just sort of fell together?
You know, I wrote the very first words of this book 6 years ago. So it's been a very long process. It started out as just kind of a curiosity. It was kind of an experiment where I was said, what are these big fat lies, and what is the deal here with this? It kind of started like that, and then I started keeping a list and taking notes of these big fat lies, because I found that when my clients, when I said, that sounds like a big fat lie, they would start standing up for themselves and say, that is a big fat lie. I am good enough. Or, you know what? It isn't too late for me. They would start really standing up for themselves, and so their power started to come back. And I started to create these lists, and every once in a while, I'll still to this day, actually today I was looking through an older notebook, and I saw big fat lie, and one of my lists written down from forever ago, because I started to become a little obsessive with, there's that big fat lie. Oh, that's a big fat lie. And it really was the lens that I started looking through everything at. And then I would start writing the corresponding truths. And so it really definitely has been a long journey and a big journey, and definitely the world of getting a publishing deal and all of that stuff played into it. But it started out as a passion project, and now finally here I am with a published book.
Oh, congratulations. And it just launched, I believe, on the 19th of October, was it?
It did. It launched on the 19th of October, and I was so thrilled. I ended up getting up to number one in self-help and a whole bunch of other categories, and number 39 in books overall, and I've just been absolutely overjoyed with the incredible response.
Well, I'm sure that will be sustained. It's not something that will, be this rising thing as a best-selling author and then kind of receding, because it has so much wonderful truth in it.
Thank you.
You know, all the big fat lies, you can call them false beliefs. But I like big fat lies because it has a tendency to attract the person. I mean, we've all heard false beliefs for years, and people get kind of numbed out to certain words that are overused, or you know what I mean? But
yeah.
big fat lies is very attractive, I think.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Well, from your mouth to the goddess's ears, my publisher's been very thrilled, and I've been thrilled, and it's been so exciting to be at a book reading and have someone come up with 10 books because they're going to give them all to their girlfriends for Christmas.
Yeah.
And that to me is like, yes, that's it. You know, I had a woman at my book reading the other day, one of my book signings, and she said to me, she was purchasing five books. And I said, how did you make your way here? And she had just found it in Barnes & Noble. They had a display up because I was doing a reading, and she found it. She was coming out of the bathroom and saw it and picked it up and was like, oh, my gosh. And then she started reading it, and she was like, I got to go meet this woman. And then she was buying copies for everybody. And it's just like a dream come true to have that kind of momentum going on.
Oh, it is wonderful. I will, again, congratulate you. It's just, we're all celebrating with you. We have some friends in the chat room. We're all celebrating with you tonight.
Oh, thank you, friends in the chat room. Well, right, and it has been interesting for me, and I just want to point this out because there's a learning in here that, I had all sorts of inner critics and big fat lies come up as this success came in. And one of them was, if I celebrate, and this is, of course, in the book, if I celebrate, the other shoe will drop. And I've been really working on that big fat lie of saying, it's okay, I have permission to celebrate. And really working with the permission to celebrate and have it not mean that people are going to be jealous or not like me. And all of my own stuff came up, all of my own big fat lies. So it's really, I really appreciate more than anyone could ever understand how much having the chat room congratulate me and the calls and the emails and all of the support that I've been getting means the world to me, and it's really an opportunity for me to walk my talk by sharing in the celebration with everyone.
Well, I read that part over the last few days about the celebration.
Yeah.
And that really hit me in the sense, I can't quite explain it, but I think it was this idea that everything is a celebration. There's no reason to think that you have to wait to celebrate anything.
Yes.
And how we can just do that anytime and every time. And that just lifts your spirit. It lifts your spirit so that more fun and good times actually come to you because of that great spirit that you're putting out there.
Thank you. Well, I appreciate that. And that's true, right? I one of the things that I say in the book on this lie is around, you know, why not celebrate even the possibility of good news? Because the superstition of, I don't want to jinx it. I'm not going to tell anyone about the possibility of the promotion, or maybe my book is going to do well, or I think this might be the one. I think this might be the right guy for me or the right gal for me. It's like, why are we withholding and robbing ourselves of celebration? So everyone listening, I challenge you, figure out, you know, decide right now something that you can celebrate and do a little happy dance for yourself just for the sheer joy of it, because it certainly can't hurt. And, you know, we have this inner critic that says, oh, you don't want to celebrate because you don't want to be disappointed. Well, that would be useful, I guess, if it worked. But here's the thing, if you're up for the promotion and you don't end up getting it, I'm pretty sure you'll probably be a little bit disappointed. And wouldn't it have been more fun to have celebrated it and shared the good news with your close friends and family instead of hiding that possibility under a bushel, so to speak?
Under a bushel, right. Well, I work with a lot of women, and I'm a nurse, so I brought the book with me to work quite a few times. And it was so funny to see people pick it up, and then we'd have discuss. Well, I work night shifts, so we have more time to be intimate with one another, as it were. And many people, you know, picked up the book and would read some of the lies and just couldn't believe how deep it really is.
Thank you.
I do wish that women treated each other better in the, you know, common workplace, and that there's a lot of things that are just unsettling about the way women, how they think about themselves.
Yes.
Which then in turn manifests as a lot of backstabbing, a lot of jealousy, you know, a lot of insecurity, really.
Yes. Yeah, well, I think one of the things that I love that you're saying here, and this is so true, is that when that kind of behavior is going on, I can guarantee you that it's from that their own inner critic. You know, women are belittling other people, when they're lashing out, when they're backstabbing, I always feel such compassion when I see people doing that, because I know that their inner world, their inner critic must be beating them up so bad. It's like the kids on the playground, the bullies. They're always the ones that have something going on at home. They're always the ones that are acting out. And so when women are acting like that towards each other, they are acting out. And so when you're in the face of that kind of behavior, you know, really finding that place of compassion for that person and knowing that they're acting out. And when I say compassion, I don't mean, you know, being a doormat and having that person walking all over you.
But
oftentimes that gets collapsed of like, oh, if I'm compassionate, then that means that I'm going to be nice and I'm not going to say anything or stand up for myself. Oh, no, 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 no. That's not what I'm saying.
No,
you know, there's
no.
a way to compassionately say, gosh, I can really see that you're in pain and I will not be a part of this. I will not be your punching bag, so to speak.
Right.
Yeah.
And they are hurting, and there is a lot of black wall painting, and it's like a lot of bad vibes going around, and nobody, and people get confused, and they don't know how to address it, and so, you know, I love the people I work with, and I love the ones that are difficult, and I love the ones that aren't, but it's going to be hard to say goodbye to them all when the time comes, because that is exactly what will happen, and it's a beautiful thing, though, you know, it's just everybody, women. You can just look at a person and see what they're holding on to or hanging on to, really. On my 60th birthday, we had my colleagues and I went, and it was in the middle. Here, I live in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, so my birthday's in the beginning of March, and it was really, really cold outside. But we all went into a hot tub, and I was the first one to throw off all of my clothing. And
yeah.
it was a shock to them, because they're really, I think it's hard to be younger sometimes. But anyway, we all in the end threw off our clothes, and it was just hysterically fun. And none of us ever forgot it and never will forget it, because it was, in the end, it was liberating. It was liberating us towards a feeling of great camaraderie and women, womanhood, you know, getting together as women. It was really great.
Beautiful.
I don't know where
beautiful.
I think that the big fat lies that we tell ourselves as we age is a good topic.
Absolutely, yes. It's so interesting to really look at our definition of beauty and really look at how we define beauty and really start looking for ways that we can redefine beauty as women so that wrinkles and cellulite are included in that definition. I don't know who decided that wrinkles and cellulite were unacceptable, but it's something every woman has. I don't know any women who don't have cellulite or wrinkles that are, you know, above the age of probably 16, I would say.
Right.
Maybe 20.
Right.
I don't know. I don't know where it starts these days. But, you know, really, really looking at that and saying, why are we torturing ourselves with the expectation that we're going to be not human?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And, well, I think that it goes very, very deep in our society with a lot of ageism. And as I pointed out on my blog last night, I have a dog, a very beautiful dog, who he's only 10, but he almost died last winter.
Mm.
He almost died of a very, very bad cancer. So he survived, and he survived with, I would say, 15 different interventions, natural interventions, and finally we were able to get a surgery for him. But I see a lot of ageism in the dog world. You know, he's an old dog. He's lived a good life, but no, he bounced right back and he's like a puppy again. And the ageism that goes through all of our society is deeper than it probably is in European cultures. Even though I haven't been in Europe, but I know that people do say that there isn't that, that fear of growing old, the worshiping of youth, and all the false beliefs that go along with that somehow when you grow a little older, you're losing, everything, basically.
Mm.
And those big fat lies are really worth busting through. And I think maybe a lot of what the big fat lies that are in your book are rooted in the fear of death, are rooted in the fear of growing old or older. And I think it all starts from those fears, you know, in our society especially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that you're right. I have in the book, I know, the wonderful quote. One of the fun things about the book is every big fat lie. There's 59 big fat lies, just for those of you listening that haven't ordered a copy yet, and I hope that this conversation will inspire you to. But the book does have 59 big fat lies in it, and each lie is then responded to with the truth, a coaching challenge exercise, an affirmation, and an inspiring quote. So it's very bite-sized, very palatable self-help that you can do anytime, anywhere. As you were saying, I love the image of having nurses at the nursing station pick up the book and kind of flip it open to one of the lies or look at the table of contents and go there. Such a beautiful image. And, you know, one of the things that you just reminded me of is the Bonnie Friedman quote, why wait for a near-death experience when life itself is a near-death experience?
Yeah, I just read that in your book, and boy, oh boy, is that true.
Yeah.
That life is. The whole of life is a near-death experience, because none of us are going to get out so-called alive.
Right.
I mean, you know, I believe in life after death, or maybe that there isn't any separation at all, because I had that experience recently with a so-called death that happened in our lives, where she just didn't really go anywhere. I mean, and I thought that the only reason anybody goes anywhere is because we believe they're going somewhere.
Mm.
And that was a real revelation. Wow. Yeah.
Say more about that. I'm curious, if you don't mind. You've piqued my curiosity.
Well, I come from a very strong spiritual background.
Yeah.
So, meaning that my mother was a pioneer in spiritual matters, and all of her, she had many, many women friends who were very closely connected, and they all were going talking about spirituality all the time, and they read spiritual books and they would discuss them. And then there was astrology, and we would discuss astrology at length. And it was this was all back in the 60s and the 70s when it just seemed like we had and at the time I didn't quite appreciate it, but there was a true renaissance going on in my household with this kind of activity. So when my mother died, I was with her when she died, and I did feel a tremendous feeling of unconditional love that I had never really, I know this term, unconditional love and so forth, but for about 3 or 4 days, I knew what that meant. And it was a gift from her. When she died, her so-called died, I'll say, all of her wrinkles, she had a 2-month pretty heavy-duty illness that made her age quite a bit. And when she died, all of the wrinkles completely left her face, and she looked like a 14-year-old.
Yeah.
And we were just all, my husband and my brother and I were there when she passed. And but there was just this amazing, unconditional, loving experience that I know I experienced. I think my brother did to a certain extent. And it was something I never forgot. So then when my dog Lucunda died in January of about two years ago by now, I had a really hard time with that. Now, I began to think that I had a harder time with animals passing than with people passing. But what happened through that process of his passing was that I did feel that there was no separation. That he was everywhere with me. And then my other dog, Ulysses, was also, he grew into himself. And so the friend who recently passed was my mother's best friend. She was about 87, and once again, there's something about these people passing. You just never think they're going to go. You never think they're going to die, quote unquote. You don't really think your mother, your father, your the close spiritual friends that you have are ever going to die. Well, that's because they never do die.
Yeah.
So that was the revelation that I had when my friend Joanne passed. She didn't really go anywhere, and she is everywhere, and I feel her. I hear her laugh, and I hear her, and through her friend, her friend Sheila, who is the astrologer that comes on this show every month. She tells me some of the stuff that goes on in her life surrounding Joanne. That the woman just basically hasn't. I mean, she has her own journey now, and she has her own thing that she's doing. And sometimes, I can feel. With my own mother, that she has stuff that she's doing. But when Joanne was getting ready to die, which none of us could believe that she really was, I could feel my mother's presence very much next to me. And I thought, oh my gosh, that means Joanne is really going to pass. And that's how I knew she was. So, I mean, I'm not a heavy-duty, spiritual. I really can't communicate with the people on the other side, or maybe let's just say it hasn't been my great interest. But this experience showed me that there really is no separation between the two worlds. If there are two worlds, let's call it multi-world kind of dimensional thing, that there's no separation, and we just have to open ourselves to it.
Yeah, beautiful. Well, that's just such a beautiful story, and I've been present to a couple of deaths and had the privilege, which it really is a privilege, to be in the room when someone passes and takes their last breath. And it is definitely a humbling amazing, magnificent spiritual experience. Mm-hmm. I remember I was not present when my grandfather passed, and my sister was, and she said, "Amy, have you ever watched someone die before?" And I said, no, I haven't. She said, "I highly recommend it."
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Yeah." And then I was able to be there with my grandmother and then my mother-in-law, and it was really an important experience. And so
Yes. Anyone
who's listening right now who may be afraid of having that experience, I think it's one of the most important experiences for us to have as human beings, because you realize how we are just in this vessel. And when the vessel goes, there's so much more going on than we even could possibly know about. And you know, and also just watching someone pass and seeing the hallucinations and the visitors that they get, which I don't think are hallucinations at all, but seeing, you know, the visitors that they get and seeing people talk to people and have memories come up of people that have passed, it's just really profound.
Yeah, really, I highly really recommend what I would call the deathbed vigil.
Yeah.
We sat around my aunt, who was in the process of dying, for about 3 days. It was one of the greatest celebrations. Talk about celebrations. Her husband had he had passed years before, but he was an Episcopalian priest. So every hour the Episcopalian clergy would come by, and that was just really delightful. And then we were having so much fun, so that when the time came, when she passed, we were all circling around her bed. But the really difficult part of that was going back into the world. It just seems so mundane
right.
in comparison to this.
Yeah, yeah.
So
it's true.
There is a
certain sacredness, and so that's what I was pointing to in the Big Fat Lie about that only near death experience serve as wake up calls. And I agree with you. I think that there's something really interesting that happens when we're in that death space, whether we're with someone who's passing or have an experience in our own lives that gives us that moment of, oh my gosh, I'm realizing, you know, my mortality. And I think that there is a way that we can begin to capture that and have that life force running through us at a higher level in our everyday life. And I think it does come from having really important sacred practices with yourself and ways to also really look at, you know, are you really living your life to the fullest? And doing that prioritization inventory and doing the death check-in. You know, if you knew you only had 1 year left to live, how would you spend your time?
Right.
And what is it that you've been putting off? Where in your life have you gone to sleep? And making just one bold change about one thing can really make all the difference.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
As I was reading your book, I came to the realization that I'm just not happy at my work, and I do intend. So what I did is I went to my bosses and I cut down my hours, and that made me feel so good.
Yeah.
So that was one, like you said, one step.
Yeah.
All you have to take is one step, and it was inspired, and I did it, and it made me feel just terrific.
Good. I'm so glad.
Yeah.
I'm so happy for you. That's fantastic.
Oh, thank you. And now I can celebrate because it's a relief. It's just a really relief. And I'm going to be not trying, because that's a horrible word, but we'll be publishing a book in the next 3 or 4 months. So I need to kind of phase out the one and get into the other.
Yeah.
And so that really felt great. And I appreciate reading your words helped me to do that. So thank you.
My pleasure. My absolute pleasure, and I'm so grateful to hear that, and I know how bold that is. I'm curious for you, when you were making that decision and coming and really, you know, the day that you went in and asked for the hours and so on and so forth, I'm curious for you as of what Big Fat Lies came up for you in those moments.
Well, the lies had been going on up until the time I decided to do it, because I just feel more and more suffocated within the corporate environment. I mean, I love what I do, but I don't like the corporate environment, which has become not fair. It's not family oriented. It's and once again, it's And of course, I mean, I could change my mind about how I look at it, but I really believe that it's become more of a strangulation and a suffocation than it is a liberation. So, I mean, I've been nursing now for 30 years, and I have seen in the years gone by, earlier years of my practice, people were more compassionate before it became sort of a corporate takeover. And now that it has become just 100% corporate takeover, it's just almost unbearable.
Yeah. Well, you're not alone. I know so many people. I have many women in my Inner Wisdom Golden Circle program that are doctors. It's interesting. This is a small group program that I co-run with Christina Rila, who's a fellow coach and also co-founder of Inner Mean Girl Reform School. And we have our
I love that. That's really funny.
Oh, thank you. So do I. It's so fun. And she, her and I have founded the Inner Wisdom Golden Circle, and we just are actually on the very completion, on the 22nd, we'll officially complete our 9-month-long program with this incredible group of 20 women. And it was interesting because out of those 20 women, we have 4 doctors in the group.
Oh, my goodness.
Which is just so fascinating. And
yes,
these doctors are right at the edge of right where you are.
Yes.
Feeling so frustrated with the state of the healthcare industry, and so just at the edge of burnout and of really feeling like there's got to be a better way, and they're really starting to become change agents in the industry. Yeah.
Well, I agree. Now, I believe that just quickly, I want to hear more about your coaching program, but I do think I have to say this: that the real reason for burnout is the fact that we are not, that we don't have good access to our healthcare system in this country.
Mm-hmm.
When you have over 100 million people who don't have healthcare, and then the healthcare insurance kind of thing, and then the people who have insurance have very poor access, then we have burnout in our profession because we can't help people. And that's what we're here. That's why we're there. That's why we are where we are, because we want to help people and take care of them when they're ill, and hopefully, you know, create relationships with them. And you can't do that if they can't, when they come with soaring, sugar, high, all of a sudden undiagnosed diabetes, high sugars, and you can't save them. That kind of thing. Or they come after giving up their medicines because they can't afford them, and they come in with brain stem injuries, and you, the only thing you can do is keep them alive until the family comes to say goodbye. This is not healthcare.
No.
This is murder. So anyway, as you can see, I'm kind of passionate about that. So I want to hear about your coaching program.
Yes. Well, Christine and I run Inner Mean Girl Reform School, which is a reform school for our inner critics, for our inner mean girls that are running the show, and people can start with a free transformation starter kit at innermeangirl.com. That's innermeangirl.com, and you'll get an audio and an ebook all about the Inner Mean Girl Revolution as we're talking about it. We've put over 400 women go through our 10-step process to reform their inner mean girls. And it's just been so wonderful and such an incredible experience for us as guides and leaders and teachers, and for our students, our classroom of women from around the world that are really taking back their feminine power and utilizing it to its fullest. And we're actually just at the tail end of our live fall class that we did, and we'll be teaching live again in the new year, a couple times, I believe, 1 or 2 times next year. We're just finalizing our calendar. But we have a home study kit that people can do anytime. That's really fun. You can have the CD kit delivered to your doorstep or do the digital kit. And you can find out more at innermeangirlreformschool.com. But out of that program, after we led this 10-step transformation a few times, we had a very strong response from our students that were asking, you know, what's next? Now that we've done this 10-step process, how can we keep this learning alive? And so we created the Inner Wisdom Circles, and we have two different circles. One is our Inner Wisdom Golden Circle, which is a 9-month-long exclusive program where we take between 15 and 20 women through a 9-month-long process to really hone their feminine superpowers, as we like to call them, and to really create a breakthrough year. And we're actually opening up applications for our 2012 Golden Circle this week. We're actually opening it up tomorrow. And if anybody's interested out there, you can go to innerwisdomgoldencircle.com and put in your name and email, and we'll shoot you over the applications when we release them tomorrow. It's on a first-come, first-served basis, so you're in for a treat if you're interested, if this is inspiring you to get in on the ground level of having your application turned in. Again, innerwisdomgoldencircle.com.
Okay.
And then we also have an ongoing Inner Wisdom Circle called our Going Deeper Circle that is a monthly, a month-to-month a program for women that are interested in going into community with other women. It's less of a time commitment than our Golden Circle, but very, very powerful. We have a really gorgeous group of women in our Going Deeper Circle that have actually stayed for over all of them, I think, actually almost 19 months, and they're just the best. These ladies are so amazing
over
the U.S. and just incredible ladies. And you can, if you fill out at innerwisdomgoldencircle.com, we'll also send you information about that circle as well. We're going to be opening that up this week as well. So you're catching me at a good time.
Oh, this is great.
Yeah.
I'm sort of stuck. It's not www.innermeangirlreformschool, but it's Inner Mean Girl Reform School, right?
It is. Innermeangirlreformschool.com does go to our home study kit, and you can also go to innermeangirl.com, and that'll take you to our free transformation starter kit.
Okay. I'm going to try and type this into yeah, that works. Okay, it's Inner Mean Girl Reform School. And does that take us to some of the other things that you're doing in terms of the Inner Wisdom Golden Circle?
No, there's a different one for Inner Wisdom Golden Circle. That's innerwisdomgoldencircle.com. And there's not much there on the innerwisdomgoldencircle.com page right now because we're just getting ready to open enrollment, but people can let us know if they'd like to if they'd like to hear from us about that, and we'll go ahead and send them an email this week about getting an application in.
I get it. Oh, you must be very excited.
It
You're
is
be very
exciting.
Busy.
Yes, it really,
yeah.
really is. Thank you. Yeah, it's fun. It's really, really fun.
Yes. You get deeper into people's stuff. Everybody's very honest. They're really, everybody has the same goal to, you know, just get rid of all this anxiety and this worry, whatever that's
yeah.
holding us back.
Yes.
Like you said, it is the inner critic. I guess there's a lot of words for that, but it's something that really is, we can't look at it as the enemy, can we? We have to look at our inner critic as more of a wake-up call as to how we need to go deeper into our inner wisdom.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and I would really say that I think that our inner critics have served a profound purpose. We always jokingly say at Inner Mean Girl Reform School, you'll love your inner mean girl to death. And what we mean by that is that it is about looking at our inner mean girls, our inner critics, our inner bullies, and loving them because they served a purpose. They, you know, they kept us safe at one point or another in our life. That's really, it really is about safety. It's about, you know, in brain science terms, it's about the homeostasis. You know, your brain wants to stay in homeostasis. It wants to maintain the same chemical levels that it's always known. And so it will fight to maintain the status quo. And the same thing with our inner mean girls. And so sometimes it takes looking at that inner critic, looking at that inner mean girl, and reassuring her that it is safe and that you are okay.
Yes.
And that really does have a big impact on her loosening her grip, her willingly stepping, you know, to step out of the driver's seat of your life, to invite her to go ahead. It's okay. You can go to the movies now while I go and write my book. Thank you very much. You know,
yes,
it is safe. We can, we're going to be okay. And it really does make a difference when you approach it that way, instead of thinking that you have to strangle your inner mean girl or your inner critic to death, because it really won't work. The subtitle of my book is Ditch Your Inner Critic and Wake Up Your Inner Superstar. And it does feel like that on some level, like you're kind of ditching them, you know. It's like that childhood feeling of like, I'm going to ditch this inner critic of mine. And there's a playfulness about it, because I'm all for a sense of play as often as possible in our lives.
That's right. And befriending that which has bogged us down in the end is incorporating it into the transformation, really.
Yeah.
Somehow through spiritual work.
Yes.
I think that's the answer.
Yes. Yes, I agree. I agree, and I think that, it's one of the reasons I have a three-step process that I talk about in my book, and I talk about an Inner Mean Girl Reform School. And this is a process that people can do anytime they're feeling any sort of negative emotion. And step one of the process is whenever you're feeling a negative emotion, and so everyone listening, we can kind of do this together.
Good, yeah.
You can just think about an area of your life where you're really hard on yourself. My book has different sections, so, you know, maybe it's kind of those core places that you're hard on yourself. Maybe you say a big fat lie like, I'm unlovable, or I'm damaged goods, or I'm just not good enough. Or maybe you're hard on yourself about the way your body looks, and so you have one of those big fat lies that says, I'm too da-da-da-da, you know, fill in the blank, fat, thin, short, tall, ugly, whatever. Or maybe it's around success. You know, you have a lot of beliefs and big fat lies that are telling you that you're failing. Maybe it's around money. You feel like, I just can never have enough. Or it's okay for me to go and spend more than I have. Another big fat lie. Or maybe it's around authenticity. You know, if I say no, people won't like me. Or, people will hate me if I'm my real self. I don't have any boundaries. Or maybe it's around spirituality. You're saying I have no purpose in life. Those are all big fat lies. So just bring to mind that area of your life that you are feeling stuck in, that you are being hard on yourself about. And then you can walk through this three-step process with us here. Step one is to ask, what is my inner critic saying? And this is where you give your inner critic, who's been whispering or yelling at you through a megaphone, giving her the floor. And it seems a little bit weird to have that be step one, because a little uncomfortable for some people to finally out those big fat lies. And it's so important, because it's our resistance to those big fat lies, a resistance to our inner critic, that keeps her in the driver's seat. It strengthens her when you're trying to pretend like you're not being hard on yourself. And so just step one, what is my inner critic saying? And you can write this down. Journal it. You can do it in the moment inside your head. You can do it with a partner. We always do it with partners at Inner Mean Girl Reform School. So what is my inner critic saying? And just bring the big fat lies out of the shadows and into the light so they can be healed. And then once you feel like your inner mean girl, your inner critic has had a rant, go ahead and take a deep breath and close your eyes, as long as you're not driving. Just closing your eyes. And just asking, what does my inner wisdom know? What does my inner wisdom know? And giving your inner wisdom the opportunity to respond. Giving your inner wisdom the opportunity to tell the truth. And what I love about this is that your inner wisdom might be right there ready to tell you how beautiful you are, or what a success you are, or how much you love, how lovable you are. And your inner wisdom might also be there with a hard truth, with a wake-up call truth. My friend Maria says, a come-to-Jesus moment, you know. And the difference is that when you're with your inner wisdom will say it from a space of profound self-love, from compassion. And she'll tell you the truth in that compassionate way. She'll say, you know, sweetie, it's time to get out of the relationship, instead of your inner critic that might be beating you up with that. So really allowing yourself to sink into, what does my inner wisdom know? Good. Just really breathing that in. And then the third step is a neuro-linguistic programming technique. And this is for you to really anchor in your inner wisdom's truth. And you do this by doing a physical movement while repeating back your inner wisdom's truth while doing that physical movement. So for me, I tap on my heart. Whatever it is for you, just doing that physical movement. Mm-hmm. And just going ahead and repeating back your inner wisdom's truth out loud if possible by doing that movement. And I've done this process thousands of times myself and also with thousands of clients from all different cultures and all different parts of the world. And it's very, very simple. It's easy to remember. You can have it in your back pocket anytime you want. And it can be very powerful to just give that space to your inner wisdom. And so I hope that all of you will take that as a little, as Christine likes to say, my partner at Intermingle Reform School, she says, a self-love tic-tac. So you can just take that as a little self-love tic-tac with you from listening to the show today.
That's great. That's a very, something you can do in just a few minutes in any time of day or night.
Yeah, exactly. That's the goal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Keep it simple so that and doable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, yeah.
Well, as somebody is asking in the chat room, my friend Carol is asking, and this is a great question. You do address this in your book about relationships.
Mm.
She's worked through a lot of this because when she split with her ex, she had to get herself together instead of feeling resentful and so forth. So she was wondering if the reason women are so critical on ourselves is because we are trying to be something for somebody else, not being true to ourselves.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Phrase the question one more time.
Well, she's wondering if the reason we are so critical as women is that because we are into service mode. Let's put it that way. We are serving our children. We're serving our family. And even as nurses, you know, we go in and start serving our patients. And maybe there is a little codependency stuff going on with all of this with women. And,
yes.
And women have a certain amount of codependency that men do not have.
Yes.
So that is why I think your book is very apropos more to women than men, is because of the codependency issues.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we oftentimes, I think that she's exactly right, Carol. I think you're right on in that one of the reasons we're so overly critical on ourselves is because we're trying to be everything to everyone. And as they say, if you try to be everything to everyone, you're nobody to no one. Because there's this way in which your identity is completely gotten lost by trying to be the perfect wife, be the perfect mom, be the perfect friend, be the perfect whatever. And it can be incredibly frustrating for us as women. We have so many hats that we're trying to wear. So I say in the book, it's like we, we're supposed to be as flexible as Gumby on muscle relaxers. And it's just like, come on. And when you really think about the journey that we've had as women over the last 100 years, and you look at, I think we've, in a lot of ways, had a very external focus. We, and out of necessity, and thank God we have in so many ways, there's that external focus of, making it so that we would, have the right to vote, that we could be, choose different careers for ourselves, choose to be working moms if we wanted to. And that was a really important focus. And now I feel like the pendulum is swinging and that we are going in a different direction now and really wanting to focus on the internal things of what's really going to make us happy as individuals, what's going to make us thrive as women. And so when you look at the divorce rates at the where they're at, and you look at that twice as many American women are affected by depression as men, and that there's 5 to 10 million women and girls with eating disorders, and that studies are showing that our happiness, we've gotten more powerful but less happy, that our happiness has declined, mm-hmm. both mm-hmm. absolutely and relative to men. You know, these studies are really showing us that all of those external things that we thought would bring us happiness, the power, mm-hmm. the power, has not brought us happiness. And so
right.
we're shifting back to a feminine paradigm where we really are looking at what is the true meaning of life here? What is going to bring me meaning, have me feel really fulfilled? And it is not those external things. And we know that maybe, or we're learning that right now, I would say, on a conscious level. And it's going to take a while for us to really be able to activate that on a subconscious level and have it become the collective consciousness. Because the male paradigm of more power, more money, bigger is better mentality is just not true. And as we can see, it is falling apart around us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is great because now we can rebuild.
Right. Exactly.
Well, another mm-hmm. thing women get into that men may not get into as much is, you know, lots and lots of pharmaceutical drugs, lots of prescriptions leading to just terrible addiction. And, you know, the addiction problems that we're having in society today aren't really due to the street drugs as they once were, but due to the physicians prescribing very dangerous medicines to people.
Mm.
And that really makes it very hard to be clear and forthright in your power.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's very true and really, really important.
It is important.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just such a there's so much to it that I would highly recommend everybody reading your book to just kind of deepen their awareness of I think there's a state of denial about how unhappy or how we trick ourselves into being kind of down, you know, about things. So the denial can really be broken through by reading your book. I mean, after a while you begin to say, okay, yeah, that's something I either have done or do now. And in your second edition, when you write, to your book, you do need to add the stuff about aging.
Yeah.
Because that would be very, very important to many, you know, the baby boomers that are growing older at this point.
Yeah.
And
thank you. Yeah,
you
I
know,
always say the 59 is the starting list.
That's
yeah,
right.
I definitely
That's
always
right.
envisioned that it would be a series of books, and I agree with you. I always have people coming up and saying, oh, I wish you could have included this in the book. I'm like, me too. I wish I would have thought of that one. Or there are different phrasings of the lies that are covered in the book, and I think that It's Too Late for Me covers part of that. But I think,
the
big fat lie of that, you know, that being older means you're not beautiful is just, it's crazy.
Oh, my. Did you ever see pictures of Peace Pilgrim, the beautiful woman who walked, she gave everything up, I don't think she really called it a vow of poverty, but she, way back in the 50s and 40s, I think, but maybe the 50s and 60s, decided to protest in her own way the wars that have been going on forever by just walking across the country for peace. And when you see, but she was a deeply spiritual woman. And when you would see pictures of her, she was fairly, you know, aging with the beautiful white hair. The only thing she wore was a little pouch that she wore around her waist with a little notebook and a pen or a pencil. And she has this most radiant light coming out of her eyes. So I would say that there's something more beautiful about that than anything in the whole world.
Yeah.
There's nothing more beautiful than that. So people need to redefine beauty and not put it in little blocks or cages, I would almost say. You know,
yeah.
It's something that needs to be liberated.
Indeed. Great. I agree. Absolutely. And it's something that, you know, men become distinguished, as they say, and then women become, you know, old. And it's like, well, we need to redefine this module, you know, paradigm here.
Oh, my gosh. We do. And I think that's the most important thing we can do, really, as so many people are. I guess there's like this huge population of older people that are turning 60 every minute. And that population of people needs to really... They need help, really. They do.
Yeah,
with
absolutely.
Their belief system, with their mean girl or whatever, their inner critic, the things that are holding us back are these weights that society is defining us as, and it's something that
exactly.
needs to be changed. Yeah. So I'm excited.
Well, and
about
I think
that.
It's interesting because when you really look at it on a you know, from a research standpoint, I quoted some of this research in my book, that 92% of all of the media's messages, the advertising industry's messages, which are essentially telling us you are not enough, that go into our subconscious mind. Only 8%
mm-hmm.
registers in our conscious mind.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
even though we think we're smart consumers, we're still getting that messaging on a subconscious level that says wrinkles are not okay, wrinkles are not beautiful, turning older is not beauty, you know, you got to be younger, you got to look younger, you got to be thinner, all of that junk is
oh, yes,
of our
yes.
subconscious mind.
Yes, and wasn't there an actress that I think you quoted in your book who said, who looked at pictures of herself and didn't even recognize herself because of the way
oh,
they airbrushed
Cindy Crawford.
Her.
Cindy Crawford said,
yes.
I don't even look like Cindy Crawford.
That is,
you know, she'd been
hysterical.
So photoshopped and airbrushed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. They don't do that to men. You know,
I don't know. Maybe they do, but I can tell you what, the standard is not for them to be, you know, subhuman. I mean, it really is human-like creatures that we're looking at in magazines at this point.
Yeah, they aren't. They aren't human. They look like little aliens, actually.
Yeah.
Or
exactly.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, maybe it's time to embrace the aliens and other and other dimensions into our society.
we wouldn't even be able to recognize them, right?
or maybe we would because we've been seeing them in the magazines for so long.
Right. Exactly.
Oh my gosh, that's funny.
Good point.
Well,
oh my goodness.
Yeah, I guess we've come to the end of our hour, and I really enjoyed this thoroughly. It's been
me
just
too.
A real
it was
pleasure.
Really lovely talking with you, and thank you to all your listeners out there for their questions and for just communicating on the chat with you. Just wonderful.
Yes. I will make this show available on the archive. And we can use that to further, you know, get sales for your books, The Big Fat Lies That Women Tell Themselves. And also I want to talk about your, you know, your coaching programs and the blogs that I write too. So,
oh, thank you so much. That's wonderful.
Oh, definitely.
Well, and I'll just tell everyone that when you order a copy of the book, you can receive 7 free bonus gifts. So from all the details on that, the website is bigfatliesbook.com, bigfatliesbook.com, and you'll find some wonderful bonuses from people like Sark and myself that go along and really complement the book in a big way.
Yes, as a matter of fact, I just accessed that page today and downloaded those gifts, so they really are special. Thank you.
Oh, good. I'm so glad. Wonderful.
Great. Amy, it's been wonderful to meet you, and I appreciate your, you know, taking your time tonight, and we had a great conversation, which is really fun. So have a wonderful evening.
Okay, thank you so much. All the best.
All the best to you.
Bye-bye.
I'm going to be playing music for Mother and Child by Klaus D. Jensen.
Thank you.